A very good Breeders' Cup pre-entry Monday race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201. SportsZone 964 if you're listening to SiriusXM online and at our websites, thepick.com, and all the focus, not just at Keeneland for Breeders' Cup, and there's plenty of focus for the sale, too. You've got in about an hour, and we're going to talk to Steve Asmussen right off the jump, reaching Steve now to open the show, because he's at Fasig Tipton, October sale, the last call for yearlings. Plenty of interesting race action to recap from the weekend, including some carryover hijinks that are going to linger until Thursday, right? The sequence yesterday at Belmont was very surprising that carried to Sunday. Because the winner, the upset winner that triggered the whole thing, pretty much, right? The eighth race winner was far from impossible. And there were two horses easily that you could have leaned on. But Tally Lynch with that Ed Chandler homebred, the Bellamy Road filly, that horse shouldn't have been 30-1. Should have been about half that. Just got lost on the board. But, you know, the Gomez, you can always count, it seems, on Gomez being a little forward. And I kicked myself because I looked at that filly and thought to maybe include and, you know, tried to keep it a little more conventional. You got to be a pick sixes. You got to be a little unconventional in spots to, you know, take down pools. So as a result, you got 159,000 for Thursday, and it's a fun card. It's a good card Thursday. Let's hope the weather continues to be okay. I don't want to get too far into too many things because Steve's going to join us here immediately. And what a special day for the Asmussen Barn on Saturday. Sweeping, in fact, Tyler Gaffleone sweeping all three of the weekend graded stakes, or actually two graded and one listed, but Gaffleone yesterday too for Brendan Walsh and Pocket Aces Temple City Terrors win. We'll get to that in the Dowager, but it was in the Perryville with Gunite and with Wicked Halo and the Raven Run, and Steve Asmussen all smiles after both of those stake wins. Steve, congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much. Fun, very fun.
Well, it seemed like a really fun scenario because you're now in a unusual and unique position, especially with Gunite, who looked just too good over that surface to not force his way into the sprint.
I'm actually going to prefer him into the mile in second preference into the sprint. Today is the pre-entry,
right.
And I just, the way that he handled it and the way that he went over the racetrack and looking at the field, I mean, it's extremely exciting, but obviously very pleased with how he came out of the race, but we will, you know, go back to the racetrack and have a day or two to decide exactly what to do.
How about that? I'm thrilled that we started with this, Steve. He has gone a mile, but that was, you know, as a two-year-old, one turning in the Champagne, and that's not necessarily representative of, you know, what we might anticipate. And, of course, you got a pretty good chance in the sprint anyway, I'd say.
Yes, absolutely.
With Jackie, we'll talk about that in a second. But, you know, this horse, Steve, it's funny, you and I have talked about him pretty much all summer, and he's now won 4 of 5. With the grade one placement in the Jerkins, plus the Amsterdam, the Maxfield, the Harrods Creek, and now this Perryville. So he's done very little wrong, and he keeps getting incrementally better by every measurement.
Yeah. Sarah Campion, who works with us and stuff, I thought has given him the nickname Rodney because the lack of respect he seems to get for considering, you know, he's five-time stakes winner, grade one winner, right at about 950. I figured, I guess his next grade one, and when he goes by $1 million, they'll acknowledge how good he actually is.
Well, Gunite, I mean, he just looked so comfortable and moved at will under Tyler, and just kind of drew off and didn't really give anybody a chance from the eighth pole home.
It was as good, as nice, and as comfortable a win as we could have hoped for.
Yeah.
And 106 buyer coming out of the race. As you mentioned in your intro, doing it over the surface that the Breeders' Cup is run on is a very strong positive, because, as we all know, not everybody runs their race at Keeneland.
It's true, and the place where he is most experienced, Churchill and Saratoga, he had the one start in the Champagne at Belmont, but otherwise, it's very interesting, actually, a horse that 10 of his starts had been at Saratoga and Churchill. So now an opportunity for Gunite in the Dirt Mile. So those of you that are keeping tabs, Gunite, put him on your Dirt Mile list, and you'll see that full field on Wednesday. Steve, let's talk about the filly and Wicked Halo. She's another horse that, in a lot of ways, keeps winning and doesn't seem to be getting all that much appreciation. She did break through the 90 barrier in the Fig standpoint. Nice win for her. Kind of very similar, actually, to Gunite's win earlier.
It did. It looked like a replay. Both of Tyler gave him a very similar trip. Both of them had drawn eight and got extremely similar trips, and both of them won comfortably. Wicked Halo, just a filly that started out her career and at Lone Star. How unique it is that her and Smash Ticket were in the same maiden race at Lone Star last year as two-year-olds, and they both end up in the Raven Run here at Keeneland.
Well, you're on a four-race win scheme with her, from 6 furlongs to a mile, and what is going to determine, her participation in 2 weeks?
Well, it looks very strong that she is going to participate in the Distaff Sprint. She came out of the race in great shape, and she will be pre-entered there today as well.
Unbelievable. And, of course, this a filly that is another one of the Winchell Gunrunner out of Tappet Mare phenomenons that we talk about seemingly every week.
We talk about it. I believe both of them have won 5 stakes. It's truly amazing, and to have competed at the level that they have, and as we all know, 2-year-old racing at Saratoga is as tough as it gets, and not everybody comes out of it as good as they go into it, and for them to have success as 2-year-olds at Saratoga and then have very strong 3-year-old years speaks to the Winchell's breeding program and what durable mental and physical horses they actually are.
Well, speaking of Winchell 3-year-olds, let's shift from the two winners at Keeneland and their Breeders' Cup aspirations. Let's talk about the bevy of horses that you sent out. You're one of the horsemen that certainly, like many, the 2 weeks out, the work is more important than sort of the finishing touches the week before. And Epicenter, literally the epicenter of the works yesterday.
Well, we obviously picked it up with the Breeders' Cup horses, and we're very impressed with the workouts yesterday and what they put in. And I do believe that Keeneland is a racetrack that you're rewarded for the work that you put in over it, and that's what we're hoping for off of yesterday's moves. But we were, all smiles at the Asmussen barn yesterday after the works, and we're just very blessed with some extremely talented horses that are doing really well right now.
Well, and you know, let's also, in addition to Epicenter, and I think everybody understands the equation, that as good as he's been and as much progress as he made into the summer and with the Travers win, it's going to take one more forward move, certainly against the older horses and specifically against Flightline. I said the other day, Steve, I forget who I was talking to, that it does feel like if Flightline gets beat by somebody, Epicenter is the candidate.
Oh, I can't say enough about how impressive a group of horses going into the Classic will all the Breeders' Cup races this year. And it, you know, the next couple of weeks are just going to be as exciting as it can get. I mean, everybody's works and races, well documented, just nothing. The only thing that's more impressive than one's the next one. So, and we've seen been in racing long enough to know that reputation's not going to win any of these. It's going to be their effort on that day, and that's what makes racing so special. You know, it's not going to be judged. You know, we can all have an opinion, but it's not going to add up to anything. It's going to be in the how fast you are on the day that matters most.
There you go. And those 2 days, a week from Friday and Saturday, let's touch on a couple of quick works. And one horse that certainly, kind of had some fits and starts, and you had, you know, some time off in the middle of the year, but it feels like Echo Zulu is coming into this opportunity for her as good as you could possibly want.
She's just truly special. I mean, I think that a champion is what defines her best, and her work yesterday was just a nice reminder to us of how incredible she actually is.
Well, and of course, the filly and mare sprint for her, and feels like that, you know, the time you'll have the opportunity to, you know, look toward distaff things for her later. After the first of the year, let's talk about the two distaff players, because society is a little bit out of sight, out of mind, but among three-year-olds facing elders, she, I think, is going to end up being a mojo horse, Steve. She feels like a wise guy filly moving into the distaff, and, of course, Clairiere is just Clairiere.
Well, two very special fillies, you know, society's not sneaking up on anybody. I've lived 5 for 6 in her life, you know, emphatic grade one victory in the Cotillion last time out. And I think that we've had very good success in the Breeders' Cup distaff off of the Cotillion in years past. And so, you know, you couldn't be more comfortable with how she's coming into the race. Her last couple of races and her works at Keeneland have been exceptional. With that being said, I've never seen Clairiere better. Her work yesterday was just beautiful. I mean, watching her glide through the stretch and gallop out is unbelievably exciting, and nothing but respect for who we get to run against in the distaff. So, you know, great curling mares, obviously. The field will be full of them. But couldn't be more proud of who Clairiere is and how good she's doing right now.
Very nice. Let's touch on a couple of the two-year-olds, because Grand Love, juvenile fillies. And what's Gulfport's status, Steve?
He's going to take a little bit of a break.
Okay.
He is run solid, but there's way more ability in him than I've gotten in his last 2 or 3 races. And so, you know, I think the right move is to not add to my mistakes, but to regroup.
Fair enough. And Grand Love, coming out of, the filly race at Churchill.
Yeah, I was disappointed in the Pocahontas for her, but it was just, I think, hadn't done near enough with her. And, you know, the way the racetrack played a little funny that day, come up a little empty, but that was not, I think that'll be her worst race of her life when it all gets said and done. But She's an extremely talented filly that has been very impressive working at Keeneland.
Grand love for the juvenile fillies. And, Steve, I'm curious, is Private Creed being considered for the juvenile turf sprint?
No, absolutely, front and center. You know, wins the win and you're in race here at Keeneland over the course that the Breeders' Cup is run back at. And he is, you know, perfect with the addition of blinkers on him. And he looks a picture of health. He's traveling 100%, and his confidence is exactly where you want it to be. Very talented horse that is having, you know, great success sprinting, and I don't think he'll have any trouble stretching out. But we're definitely going to take advantage of where he's at and what's available to him.
Excellent. Who are we missing? Anybody from the pre-entries?
Well, Jackie's Warrior going in the sprint.
Well,
you know, just
yeah, we mentioned. Yeah,
we sure gonna be needed. Missing Jackie, but we sure ain't gonna go a day without talking about it. You know, we'll work him in the morning. We expect him to be sharp as a tack for this year's Breeders' Cup sprint, and just absolutely in love with how he looks right now and how he's doing.
Excellent. Excellent. Let me also slip in two other horses, and I'll let you go because you're at the sale. Extra Anejo. What? Where are we with him?
Well, you know, $1.3 million yearling that actually did not disappoint. You know, as advertised, horses obviously an incredible physical with the huge pedigree that's faster than the other horses. So, I mean, a very good place to start.
Do you have something specifically in mind for him? One of the late season two-year-old?
I think they call it the Kentucky Derby, you know.
that's his next start now.
pretending that isn't what he's targeting would simply be a myth, but
that's great.
You know, we're
all right. I love it.
I love how he came out of this race, but look to moving to two turns soon. You know, the Beard course, the 7 furlong, 184 feet, nice place to get him started. But, I mean, our intentions with him, I think, are extremely obvious.
Excellent. Another stake winner over the weekend that we should throw in. Tap the Dot. You closed out the Oklahoma Classics on Friday night. Congratulations there.
Yeah, you know, lovely little gray Oklahoma bred that is owned by, you know, my brother and his childhood friend Martin Riley that have known each other since they were teenagers. I think they partnered up on their first vehicle for them to partner up on a racehorse that wins the stakes. Extremely fun. But, grew up training in South Texas with mom and dad, and Martin's father trained back then as well. So, you know, what a nice partnership and a very good win by a solid Oklahoma bred horse.
Oh, that's nice. Stewie Elliott aboard, and the under the Asmussen Equine, and as you mentioned, Martin Riley. This is a Ginger Clemmer bred Morotap 4-year-old gelding, and had been stakes, had participated in some stakes, some stakes placed, but that's the first stake win. That's great. I love it. That's a good story.
Yeah, very good story. You know, just enjoying a nice, solid, competitive horse that had a breakthrough stakes win. You know, doesn't get much better than that.
No, and Steve, I do want to mention the maiden winner from Saturday, Twirled. Looks like there's plenty of upside on this filly, Twirling Candy.
Yeah, beautiful, an absolutely beautiful Twirling Candy filly owned by Scott Dilworth and his partners. And she ran a solid first time out at Kentucky Downs, got a lot out of the race, and was a beautiful victory for us on Saturday to get the barn aimed in the right direction for what ended up being a very big afternoon.
Very much so. The stake wins plus the maiden winner, Steve Asmussen, over at Fasig Tipton at Newton Paddocks. And, Steve, before you go, they got their pencils in hand. They want to know Who are they? You know,
who's our winner of the week? Right.
Yes.
Well, I actually want to save him for the Breeders' Cup. I want to save him for the Breeders' Cup. Our luck aimed at 2 weeks from now. But we'll be competitive the rest of the week at Keeneland. Horses have been running solid, but I think everybody's focus in horse racing is going to be for what could turn out to be the best Breeders' Cup we've ever had.
And the whole season has been terrific, and the momentum is built, and some of the even the divisions that were a little sort of uncertain and kind of seemingly hollow, they have filled in. The Filly and Mare Sprint Division has thanks in part to Echo Zulu, has kind of come together. So yeah, the juveniles take care of themselves, and we know what's going on in the Distaff and the Classic, and the Asmussen Barn, well poised. Can I make Echo Light the bet of the week?
Yeah, obviously she stands out at Remington, running back in a maiden race, has had very good works since, including, she had a solid 5/8 in Company with Optionality, who's a listed stakes winning gun runner. So that should be good enough for a maiden race at Remington.
There we go. Gerardo Mora aboard this week. Steve, I appreciate this. Good luck at the sale, and we'll see you next week at Keeneland.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Steve Asmussen, everybody, and a very generous 20 minutes that he probably really didn't have to spend. You got 4 days of horse sale here to get your last chance to bring home some yearling stock. So I appreciate Steve giving us that time, and that sets us up for at least conversation and establish what is going to go on here the rest of the day. Mig is going to join us at 10 o'clock, and we'll also get a visit in with Mike Welch in hour three. Mike will go through basically has offered three clocker reports already, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And, of course, plenty of workers undoubtedly this morning. They had 200, I think he said, 200 workers at Keeneland on Saturday. So Mike has got a compendium of the weekend activities, and we'll get a feel for some of the major players, and maybe some that are bubbling to the surface. Also some of the fun stories, too, because there's a couple of there's going to be a storyline to flesh out. There's some horsemen, that are arriving with more than one horse, and Todd Fincher, right? I mean, the Fincher story is tremendous, and I noticed that Mike in one of maybe it was Saturday, George Delgado, up from Gulfstream. He's got two horses in here, that undefeated Awesome Strong in the juvenile, and Willie Boy, B-O-I, in the sprint. I'm a sucker for those kinds of stories. Speaking of other stories, Joe Clancy, top of hour three today, too. And you're going to be... you'll certainly enjoy a Marilyn Million recap with Joe's visit, you're also going to have to endure, I think, some more. I don't mean to do it to you, but I think you're going to have to, take in some Philadelphia sports. There's a big black sky over my town. Ring the bell. Play the song. I'm the way you bitch, she's a I gotta tell you. Yeah. I know it's stupid. I I'm a big baseball fan as anybody, and my fantasy league participation has sort of narrowed my interest in one particular team. But I've got JT Realmuto, and I've got Bryce Harper on my team. So I've taken an interest in the Phillies, and this was as much fun a 10 days, 2 weeks, following a baseball team as I can ever remember. I would say back to living in Kansas City and being a Royals season ticket holder. This team is as amazing and as easy to root for. Even if you didn't have an interest yesterday, you had to absolutely be amazed. It seemed like they were the ideal scenario was for them to win yesterday and sweep the end of the series, three home games. It was unbelievable. Just so much fun. And then, of course, the bedlam at the bank, as Scott Franksy said. Then bedlam up and down Broad Street and throughout the Illadelph. I would have loved to have been there this weekend. And things are just, between the Eagles and this, it's just amazing. So, and then this song. Play the song. So great. So Joe Clancy, as it turns out, Joe was in the city, and Joe and the Clancys are, the Clancys are eligible to have been Baltimore or Philadelphia fans growing up, but as it happens, they're Philly fans. And so one other thing that I get to share with Joe and Sean, particularly the Birds, because of course you know that I'm as sick of an Eagles fan as anybody, as anybody you'll ever meet, honestly. I think I'm as diseased for them as anybody, but since 1966. And Joe and his son Sam, they were in Philly yesterday in the afternoon and evening. So Joe will provide a firsthand report. I don't know if they climbed any light poles. Yeah, that greasing of the light poles, it doesn't work. I don't even know why they bother. I put up a video last night that there's a great Twitter account called Crossing Broad. They had a video from, must have been around, probably about Locust Street, looking up at City Hall. The vistas, the views in Philly, it's just unbelievable. For those who have never been, everything in Center City, every main artery looks up at City Hall, Broad and Market, and wherever, whenever you peek out to Broad or Market, there's City Hall in the center, and it's just majestic and just incredible. There's Broad Street just filled with people, and a drum line, drum corps, these drum corps that are so cool, comes, just materializes with Philly Elmo. If you haven't seen Philly Elmo, it was on the base, and just amazing. My tagline on that tweet was, there's no place like it, and there isn't. First of all, of course, part of the fun of being a fan and being associated, with Philadelphia, and as somebody basically who has moved all over the North America, I don't really have one particular town anymore that I was completely associated with. Grew up outside of Hartford for the most part. And on Long Island, but I associate more with Philly, and you know, we're in Philly, Tina and I, four or five times easily a year. And so it's our adopted city, and has been for a long time. And it's just a magical place. There are some very funny things if you were following this whole the ridiculing of San Diego, because of course, you know, San Diego is really the anti Philly in every single way. I mean, you could not pair up two more socially diametrically opposed communities as Philadelphia and San Diego. And those of you that are, you know what I mean about San Diego's conservative nature, should, you know, immediately understand that suggestion. So, you know, the Philadelphia sport fans making fun of the Padre fans and that group of that blindingly white group of guys trying to, I don't know what it was that they made such fun of, but it's all in the spirit of fun, and that's what's great. And there was San Diego sent some poor innocent reporter to Philly to cover the Padres in Philadelphia, which and the guy had the greatest line. He's standing out in front of the ballpark down at the sports complex, and people are just catcalling him, and there's a great image from last night of like an 11-year-old giving him the finger, which is just perfect. It's just Philly, and he said people are screaming profanity at me, and then when I come, you know, when I cut away, they come introduce themselves and they say welcome to Philly, and they're the nicest people, and that's what's so funny. The passion involved and the drama involved in these games, in the Phils coming back over and over, and just amazing. And I mean, here's Bryce Harper, who they gave what, how many hundreds of millions? And I mean, how clutch? You want to talk about? I mean, a clutch performance. Just amazing, just amazing. There's so many dramatic elements. You know, there's the Rhys Hopkins, who's been, you know, he's sort of the long term guy who was around through some real difficult and some down years. So I'm fully vested now. The fightin's it's just so much fun. So Joe will give us Joe will give us a boots on the ground, a literal boots on the ground. He was the opportunity to hear. Joe said he was off Broad Street, and you know, they were having dinner, he and his wife, and I don't know if they went and climbed any, you know, any light poles. So too much fun. And then there's the song, play the song. And there's even a tie for Tina and I explained to Tina, the guy who did this version of Dancing on My Own, Callum Scott. Well, maybe you've noted our grandson is Callum. Yeah. And as it happens, Zach and Andrea, this is the guy. Callum Scott, that's where they got the idea from, the name Callum. So it's kind of funny. There's all kinds of strange harmonies that are at work here. It's pretty funny. So, all right, I'm on board. Too much fun. All right, what else? Clancy, Welsh, Mig, we got Asmussen in. Got to talk about, and I suppose we'll discuss the New York win, Evie Jets in the Noble Damsel with Mig. Although we could get Matt Cantamassi's brother, Ilkey. Maybe. Cantamassi is out of the country, so we can't reach him. But I did text him just in case. But he's in Europe somewhere, and so don't think we're going to get a chance to talk to him. And I don't know when I haven't heard when he's coming back. So I do want to really give them a chance. He and his brother. Excuse me. Still sick, by the way. Tina and I, both, we're both, whatever this is, was, we're both still hacking up a storm. Very annoying. Lingering, as it is. But Evie Jets, what a terrific story this is. An $80,000 claim. And so, you know, it's one of those scenarios where Bob Amendola reaches in and they pluck this one and, you know, from Team D and from Tony Dutrow. And he'd broken, it's funny, Evie Jets had broken her maiden for $75,000. And that, you know, that then they made her available in an allowance for 80, and she was taken. So look at where this has gone. You know, that started in the fall of last year, just about a year ago. September, when was the claim? September 16th. And all Evie Jets has done since is you know, rack up wins and seconds. Cleared the allowance condition, going a mile on the turf, that came in November, right at the end of the season. The Cantamassis and Amendola put her away. And then she's come back and had a terrific year at four. And now, you know, she just missed in the Athena when Love and Thunder nailed her in the latest stage. But she cut back to a mile again, which really does feel like her ideal distance. And she's really tractable. You know, she basically kept company with Porcaino, and you know, when Cancel said go, she went, and that was that. So, you know, she's come from mid pack. She's placed herself, you know, right behind leaders before, and she's getting better too. She's no reason to think she won't improve further. She's out of a consolidator mare, which is intriguing. Farfellow Farms, Natchez Trace, and was originally a, you know, $75,000 Keeneland yearling. A great story. I delighted for the Cantamassis, and who everybody adores. I mean, are as well liked as any outfit on the racetrack. And I'll let Richie. Tell you more. I know them only as much as I do because they share a barn with Gary, and Gary absolutely loves. I think Matt. I don't know. I've only ever seen Merkin. They call Matt more often, it seems, than Ilkay, but Gary just loves them. Everybody loves them. So, graded stake win. And you know what, actually? It occurs to me, we could reach for Amendola too, right? Ooh, Case, check your file. He's been on with us, but now I'm just looking in my phone, and I am surprised that I do not. I know we had him on, so see if you can. Amendola, A-M-E-N-D, yeah. Maybe if I look here. Anyway, so that was the Noble Damsel, and I thought one of the really nice stories of the weekend. We referenced with Steve, before we talk about some of the other, stakes, and also the rest of that pick six result from yesterday heading toward Thursday. And so Andy tomorrow, I'm sure Andy's already done the Thursday work because he's insane and he has to get that work done. literally, I mean, the cards go, he's the funniest. He'll call me sometime at 5:30. The PPs aren't out. Andy, they drew it. They drew the card at 2 o'clock. I mean, it'll be out any minute. I mean, and he's like crazed. You think I'm kidding? As he says, most notably, that's his line. You think I'm kidding? You laugh, as he says. He says that to me all the time if I laugh at something he says. Let's take a look at Remington, and there is somebody that I got to reach out to Dale Day. Because there's somebody that I do want to get on, and because there was we hit that pick five and the pick four at Remington on Friday night, and I was delighted to wake up at like 4 a.m., and the first thing I did was go see what had transpired at Remington, and I had a big smile. I opened the account, and there it was. Got $500 in that pick five. I was very pleased, and... I think the pick four paid what, 150, 160? 160, I think. Yeah, that was okay. And the key to everything, actually, the key to making it pay, because it was pretty formful, was that fly to the bank. I was delighted. That horse went off over 8-1, paid 19.20. Jim Helzer. A Euro Ears. We loved Euro Ears. In fact, I think this was a Euro Ears. Was this a Euro Ears trifecta? Because Euromantic from the outside was second. Mr. Wayside, who I'd used and actually went off at a fat number. No, Mr. Wayside is a twice as bad. A Stormy Atlantic son. Interesting. Fred Kaminska, homebred for Jesse Oberlander, was third. So, no, it wasn't a Euro Ears trifecta. But Euro Ears, who gets his share of winners, did Baffert train? Baffert? Euro Ears? I think so. Fly to the bank. Five-year-old, and to me, felt like, decent value at the 5-1. And, I was asleep by this point, and went off at 10:37. So it was 11:37 our time, but, Helzer, what was interesting about this horse, Helzer bred this horse, and Juan Carlos Gallegos, is the owner, and Helzer and, Steve Martin, when they go to for some reason when they go to Fair Meadows and Will Rogers, Steve Martin has the horse, I guess, and then back to Helzer for Remington. So this horse kind of jumped at me and felt like a horse that could win on the front end if need be. But also, could sort of attend the pace. And there didn't look to be a tremendous amount of front-end interested parties. So it ends up going off at 8:60-1, paid 19.20. And that was instrumental in making that pick five pay what it did. Yeah, I was very satisfied with that. Let's give you the results. And where's my master list of... It took exactly one guest for the desk to go kablooey on me. Yep, there we go. You're just, no, There it is. There we go. There we go. I tried to reach Jess Martini, but she's tied up. So I don't, maybe no sale preview other than, you know, I'll see if there's any notable, some of the notable hips. They're going to start in about 15 minutes. Fly to the Bank, 85 buyer, winning the Oklahoma Classic Sprint. And that was a career best, is a career best, and starts to knock on the door. Five-year-old. And, you know, has made steady. That was another thing that appealed. You could see that, you know, after a string of very steady performances all through the spring, took a step forward in that race at Fair Meadows in July and sort of reached another level. So here came another forward move. So Fly to the Bank wins the sprint. All right, the rest of the action. Let's go through it. Do you Want to Dance with Goncalves, the Magna graduate, filly. Terry Westmeyer, homebred for Kerry Craddock. And Dale, in fact, by the way, for those that played, between Dale Day's visit on Thursday for Friday and Callie Francois' visit on Friday, you got your hands on a lot of winners on both of these cards. I was very pleased about how... You know, because sometimes, you know, if you don't play, if you're not playing Laurel, if you're not playing Remington, you know, sometimes people are like, it's not really, these are not circuits I play, I'm a little shy. But if you took some notes, you did fine. I mean, do you Want to Dance was, you know, was going to be a short number and what went off at what, three to five. Ghost Hero in the boys' race, Shaman Ghost. This is actually a horse that Clark Brewster bred. Jade Gellner sent out for Norman Stables. And Stewie aboard here and was 3-1. Went off as the second, or actually third choice when it came down to it. And won well. I thought this was very competitive, as we said. And certainly Ghost Hero was one of the ones. The open air outside box. This was the maiden that we told you looked like it had a chance. In the Distaff Turf, you had a decent price here. Plenty of Vision. Scott Young for Michael Schmidt. This is a Center Hills Pollard's Vision filly out of a boundary mare. And Plenty of Vision. Nice performance down inside. And nice ride by Triana. Yeah, paid $14.80. This was and beat that Run Sloopy Run, who was 1-5. The Distaff, where it you know really felt like it came down to Hits Pricey Legacy and She's All Wolf. We said that you know they were the ones, obviously, but that you know Hits Pricey Legacy. I tried to make the point with Dale the other day, did not have to win and. For some reason, she gets bet down to 1-5 herself and was dreadful. I mean, you know, just chased and never really at any point was chasing She Shiny. 30-1 shot. If you, yeah. And in the meantime, here was Donnie K. Von Hemel, newly named to the HISA advisory panel with the Magna graduate mare. She's All Wolf out of the fabulous She's All In, Bob Zellner. And she wins, I mean, just cruised on by and won off by widening lengths under Richard Aramia. Very nice. Reagan's Jet, pretty much wire-to-wire at even money. And Sunday's Flashback, that was a race where we said there was sort of two horses that made the most sense. And, yeah, I should mention the horse that I was trying to make as a price really did not help, didn't really get herself involved. Kachina, we had a few prices that over the weekend that exotic considerations that ran nicely and boosted tries and the like, but she was not one of them. Dicey was okay to be second in here, beaten just the neck at 7-1. That was Pat Swan, horse that owns with Jay Lewis. Dicey just missed. But even money on Reagan's Jet, Joe Offalter, for owner Brian Hawk. Millar Equine bred this Mr. Lucky Cat, 5-year-old mare, Reagan's Jet. And you know, she's won and placed in some Oklahoma restricted company, Reagan's Jet. Even money. We told you about the sprint. Then came the big one, and modest upset in the cup. Lynn Kleberad, owned, bred, trained the Read the Footnotes 5-year-old gelding. That's something. On the front end, under cue, Luis Quinones, pretty much wire to wire, and that's something. Second in the Red Earth to number one Dude, who chased and tried to get just under even money. Number one Dude behind That's Something, who paid $780 as the second choice in the cup. Congratulations to Lynn. And then we just talked to Steve Asmussen in the last half hour. Tap the Dot. What? That's a fun story, right? A Moro Tap gelding, bred by Ginger Clemmer. So, and you found out about the childhood friends of the Asmussens, Martin Riley, who co-owns with Cash. So that was beat half hours to keep. And they seemed like the two right ones. Quarky set the pace and stopped badly. Should find out, actually, from Broberg if Quarky bled, maybe. But yeah, had a breathing. When you see a horse stop like that, that's usually what's going on. But that was the Turf Classic, the OKC Turf Classic. So big night at Remington. In fact, what'd they do? Let me see. Handle 2.2 million. So nice night, and thanks to Dale Day, the Dale Day, for visiting. All right. Let's. We're getting up toward the top of the hour. What time is it? It is 53. Okay, got a couple more minutes. I'll save the Maryland Million chat for Joe Clancy's visit. Did okay there. I had one miscue on Saturday there. Which horse was it? There was one horse that beat me. The Turf horse. Wicked Prankster. It was 9-2, and I the Mosler, of all things. I mean, we've got our Mosler weanling, and I that was a misstep. The interesting performance at Maryland Million, Dale Capuano, that Johnny Z from Albany, the Blofeld, won the nursery. 84 buyer. That was a big effort. Johnny Z, I assume it's, Johnny Z from Albany. It was good. I actually watched most of the day, and the terrific job by Tim and Callie. I guess Callie off for a couple of days, and after a really, really good job. We kind of capped the daylights out of that, I thought, on and that was a place where we had some nice prices that came in underneath. You know what race we should mention? I'll save that for Mig too. But Celestial City, and I wasn't trying to beat Celestial City. Or Limited Liability, after Sugar joined us, last week. But I didn't feel they had to be A's either. I mean, I wanted to reach for, the prices and hopefully get a price more prominently in the Hill Prince. But Celestial City was really good. And terrific ride by Lascano. Is it me, or is Jose Lascano has gotten? He had a little bit of a hiccup, a little health. You know, he got banged up, but 100% again. And it seems like Lascano's gotten into some Jason Baez. It's gotten Lascano onto some, you know, some real live horses, and Lascano has had a particularly good fall. And he's one of those underrated, just sort of consistent guys that, you know, he's like a good official, right? That if you don't notice the referees, if you don't notice the officials, they've done a good job. Lascano, he doesn't get in the way of horses. He's kind of a. Actually, now I'm going to say this, and I wonder if they're the same age. Who do you think's older, Jose Lascano or Joel Rosario? Let's go to the videotape. Let's pull a Warner Wolf and let's see. What do you think? Anybody? Yeah, Jose Lascano, age 37 years old. Joel's got to be a year too young, right? Joel's got to be 35. No, they are the same age. How funny is that? That's hysterical. They are the same age. They're both 37. That's funny. That is funny. They're very, in a lot of ways. I mean, Joel's obviously a little bit more, you know, high profile, and, you know, he's got more grade ones, but Lascano's sort of a Rosario light. Is that fair? I don't think Jose will mind me saying that, or Jason will mind me saying that. Rosario light. He's. I think that, right? Because Jose, you think of Jose Lascano as somebody that is a little better coming from off the pace, right? Feel the same way about Joel. And actually, Lascano's a guy, we talk about Rosario not being a guy that is heavy-handed with the stick. Jose's not a guy that's heavy-handed with the stick, right? Well, I'm going to drop this in, let's drop this in Mig's lap. Mig, are you listening? Because you're next. Rich Migliori joins us next. Kind of a fun first hour. It's always a little. Steve Asmussen said, "Can I get on right at 9?" And so that always kind of throws me off. And it doesn't take much, as you know. Let's take the top of the hour break, Case, and play the song as we've been hashtagging all week when it comes to the Phils, the Fightins. Ah, what happened? There we go. This is our song, right? This is our exit song for many, 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 many years. Yeah, for those of you, you know what? Now I'm gonna. Now that we're into this, I'm gonna have to. Tell you. The official title. I always forget this. The combos. House. Case, do you have it? Do you have it tagged? Other than our famous Carson-esque, first segment playoff. Combo? No, House Rock, I think. I think just House Rock. Right? House Rock by, opening break. Ernie something combo. It's been years of that. I'll pull it up on the break. I forget. That's funny. Ernie, that sounds right, Ernie Freeman, that sounds right. Ernie Freeman combo. Let's see the official. Here, let's see if I can't get it. Yeah. Not House Rock, Rock House. Rock House, the Ernie Freeman combo. I don't even know how I found this, but it was like the perfect. Like play out underneath, right? We've been playing this for 15 years. Have we ever played my halftime college football score music in the background? Lucifer from the Alan Parsons Project. I used to when I be halftime and I'd go through they'd go to me. This is when I was a freshman. And, Casey thinks yes. It's like this great 80s Alan Parsons Project electronic sound. Perfect for, a scoreboard, giving scoreboard updates. Casey, we did try it. I did it. I used it once a few times where we went through recaps. We went through results, like I just did with Remington. We played it behind. We'll do that. I'll do that. It was perfect for that. I used it for years on my WRCU 90.1 FM. A little to the right of left. Colgate University Radio. You could plug into the wall of your dorm and listen. Back after this, Rich Migliori joins us.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place.